You guys are already ready. You got yourselves in a mostly a circle. It's kind of like a baseball diamond, actually. So maybe the kids will come down and they'll play something. They will like that. So as usual, feeling humbled sitting in front of you all. I admire this community a lot. I appreciate many of the devotees here personally. I have good relationships with some of you, and I treasure them. And so it's an awkward thing for me to be sitting here. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sangam Yakvatma Shudhaye, chapter 5, that the yogi is concerned with purification. That's the focus of the yogi. So I'm trying to be a yogi and remember that I'm sitting here for my purification somehow. And if you all can be patient with me through that, and hopefully I'll be able to, in the meantime, say something that helps us all come closer to Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, he was in Dallas or L.A., I can't remember, but Bhajri Narayan Maharaj, he tells this pastime. Has anyone ever heard Bhajri Narayan Maharaj tell pastimes of Prabhupada? He's the best. What's that? He's a very good storyteller, isn't he? He's from Detroit also. He was the first devotee to start the Ann Arbor effort, so always nice to be able to acknowledge Maharaj, because that's where we do most of our service now. Maharaj was telling that Prabhupada was walking with his disciples in a very nice area, and I think it was Dallas. Could we turn it down just a little bit? I feel like, is it too loud for anybody else, or is it just me? It's a little okay, yeah. That's, I think, appropriate. Good. Okay, thank you. Uchala Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada was walking in a pretty nice area. Big houses, rolling landscapes. He was walking with his disciples, and they saw one really nice house, really big, palatial building, as Srila Prabhupada would say. And Prabhupada lifted his cane up and said, one day we will have a very nice big house like that for Krishna. Because he could feel his disciples were, you know, kind of admiring the scenery. They might have been thinking about other ways to have a big nice house. But Prabhupada said, we'll have one day a big nice house like that for Krishna. And what did everyone say?
Jai Prabhupada.
Jai Prabhupada! So then a little further down the road on the walk, one very nice car went by. Same issue. So Prabhupada said, one day we'll have a very nice car, just like that one, for Krishna. And what did the devotees say?
Jai Prabhupada.
Jai Prabhupada. And then one neighbor was walking, their very big dog. You know, the rich people, they tend to have big things, including their animals. So one of these, like, horse dogs is what I imagine, some kind of, like, Great Dane kind of thing. Only rich people can afford to have a Great Dane, because it takes up your whole house and you have to feed it like a whole dog food bag a day. And so Srila Prabhupada points at the dog with his cane. One day we'll have a very nice big dog like that for Krishna. Now what did the devotees say? Jai Prabhupada! What was Srila Prabhupada's reply to that third Jai Prabhupada? You fools! You fools! What do we want a dog for Krishna for? It's a funny pastime. Also very telling. Sometimes in religious movements, and in our own also, there's a little too much Jai Prabhupada. There can be too much Jai Prabhupada if it's missing the other elements meant to go along with why we recognize that Srila Prabhupada deserves all glories. So the theme, if I may offer, for my offering within the theme of this retreat that we're having together over the next few days, is a little less Jai and a little more why. If you can bring yourself back to your first days of associating with the devotees, connecting to Krishna consciousness, come back to that space and think, how many questions did you have in your heart at that time? A lot. What's that?
So many,
right? So many, you don't even remember them anymore. But at that time, how important did those questions seem? Yeah, all consuming. Most of us, we were brought to a point in our life for whatever the circumstance might have been. But it's so exciting to ask devotees, how did you join? Because you hear this like pressure cooker that they got put in. Isn't it? And then somehow the magic answer comes through the mercy of a devotee, one of Prabhupada's books. They see the Harinam party. Somehow they end up at the temple. A friend invites them, whatever the case may be. And the questions begin to get answered. And it's exciting to hear the answers to those questions in the beginning. Then there comes a point 3 or 4 years down the road where we start to feel like, oh yeah, I know the answers. Now I can start giving some answers. Now people should be asking me those questions. And that's true. That's how parampara works. That's not wrong to want to start giving some answers because you've received some answers. At the same time, if we lose that dynamic in our own heart of questioning, if that inquiry and that impetus for approaching the elevated souls, what does Krishna say famously, chapter 4? How does the process of receiving mercy from the spiritual master work? Yeah, what are the three elements of relationship behavior with the spiritual master or the sadhu that Krishna asks us, encourages us to? Okay, service, that's the last one.
Submission.
Submission, but inquiry, yeah. Well, what we mean by submission is you need to approach the person. You need to go to them. And in our modern context, that often looks like a YouTube video or a little blurb on Dandavats, and we think that that's approaching. But this word submission that some of you used, can we really submit ourselves to a YouTube video? Or an article on Dandavats? Yes, if we can. But can we? So that act of actually coming in front of the devotee, literally, approaching them, and then inquiring. And then from that inquiry, then we can do what? Yeah, service. Because if you don't know what's to be done, you can't really call it service. It's just speculation. I'm doing what I feel like, and maybe this is nice. I like this, so maybe they'll like this. Srila Prabhupada gives this simple example. If the guru asks for water and you bring milk, that's not service. The guru wanted water. If he wanted milk, he would have asked for milk. So that inquiry that we bring to the spiritual master informs our service. Now, how can we be serving if we don't have inquiry? If inquiry is lost in our heart, if we think all the questions have been answered, then where's the potential for service? That dynamic is gone now. And this is why it's important. Yes, Jai Prabhupada. And yes, we've received something wonderful. And yes, we know something much more than we did 2 or 3 or 10 or 20 years ago. And also, there still must be a why in our heart. There still must be an inquiry. Otherwise, no service. And without service, no bhakti. And without bhakti, no point. It's all useless, as we hear in first canto, second chapter of Bhagavatam. If there's no bhakti, there's no point. So to keep bhakti in the center means to keep inquiry in our heart. And so to contextualize it a little more, because again we have a particular direction that we're moving in this retreat, What I wanted to focus on today, in aspiration of coming closer to Srila Prabhupada also, is to develop and deepen our relationship with the four previous acharyas, or rather five previous acharyas, that we see in the disciplic succession on our ISKCON altars. Who are those devotees? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Jagannath Das Babaji. Sadly, he's not always there. I don't know how that works. Sadly, he's not always there. But Jagannath Das Babaji, yes. So, on our ISKCON altars, we have these people, but do we know these people? Do we have a relationship with them? Or are they just kind of there on the Wikipedia page of our ISKCON conception? Part of the bullet points. Yes, Srila Prabhupada's guru was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and his guru was Srila Gaurakishore, and we can name it like that. But we don't actually have a relationship with them. So, His Holiness Prabhupada Maharaj, he was focusing on the prayers of the acharyas, and I wanted to do something similar also, but in a very condensed way, because I noticed myself it's sometimes hard to digest when there's a lot coming at you in a retreat. It's hard to take home things sometimes, because there's so much that you would like to take home, and then you wind up not being able to fit any of it in the car, so you just leave it on the curb. So there's a very famous... That's my capacity, I don't know if anybody else relates, but there's a famous bhajan from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, O Hey Vaishnav Thakur. And in that bhajan, in the third line, the third stanza, the first part of the third stanza, I would like us to keep as a mantra for our time together. Ekaki Amara. Nahi Paya Bala. Harinam Sankirtan. Alone, I do not find the strength to chant the holy name. Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj, he said this is the motto of Mahaprabhu's movement. At Harmony Collective a few days ago, a young woman, she's middle-aged, and she was coming back to the kirtan now for the third or fourth time on Thursday night. And she was sharing with me downstairs taking prasad before we went upstairs to join the kirtan, how profound it was for her to be meditating, because that's still how she conceives of the kirtan, how profound it was for her to be meditating with other people. And share your own experience now also. What is that power of meditating, or as we know, praying? What is that power of praying with other devotees in the kirtan? What is it that makes that so exceptional? Yeah. A focused atmosphere. You're there to do this, definitely. Beautiful. You may not be so enthusiastic. Oftentimes we know, right? I need to drag myself to the temple right now because I don't want to do anything for Krishna. But somebody there will be doing something for Krishna and they'll inspire me. Yeah, the inspiration of others' enthusiasm. What else about that dynamic? Common goal. Yeah, unity. Beautiful. Yes, so that's the most powerful thing. That's where Krishna wants to be. Right? Social and physiological and mental, emotional dynamics aside, Krishna gets excited wherever his devotees are singing his name and glorifying him. So he decides to be present most in those places. Now she couldn't describe all of that, but she was feeling it. That when I'm doing this with others, something is different. She's been meditating for years now. She's a hippie and kind of a rainbow mom, and she turned her house that she owns into a kind of co-op. So she's a very conscious person, new age type of individual. But the experience that she's having in the Sangha of Mahaprabhu's devotees doing kirtan is something different. Ekaki amara nahi paya bala. She said, I've never felt the enthusiasm, the connection that I do here. And she used the word vulnerable and intimate. And Krishna says the best of yogis is the one most... The best of yogis is the one who is most... Yes, intimately united with me. That's the standard of how pure can become purer. Very soon after that verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna discusses, out of many who have attained perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So what is that perfection that is without knowing Krishna? Of course, it's the Brahma Jyoti, the impersonal experience of the Lord. Our acharyas explain how purity can actually be quantified based on intimacy. Purity can be judged in some way. So this is what she's experiencing automatically and naturally. This is what we can experience. The irony is, though, that because of our conditioned consciousness, we have a tendency to want to do what? Rather than want to come together... We want to go apart. The word we hear often is independent. We want to be independent. We want to isolate. We want to stereotype because it's easier that way. And so there's an irony in our Jai Prabhupada, and this is where the Jai Prabhupada becomes difficult and dangerous. Was anybody from or had any experiences with the philosophy of Christianity before coming to Krishna consciousness? Josh, come on. Ujvala. You can't grow up in Florida and not raise your hand. Nobody had any experience with Christianity before coming to Krishna consciousness? You were spared. Okay. A little bit. There's a challenge in Christianity. Now I have one very close friend. His name is James. He does the Boga runs now at Harmony Collective. Very sweet person, deeply faithful in his Catholic practice. And I like hanging out with James more than I like hanging out with some devotees. Because he's a good soul. He really trusts God. He's trying to surrender. He's doing service, not just at his church, but he comes to Harmony Collective and asks what he can do and how he can do it because he sees that God is present in that place. So he's a good soul. So it's not that there's nothing beneficial within Christianity. And also, in general, the Christian tradition has taken a very dangerous trajectory because they've put the entirety of the experience on the relationship with one person. And not even the idea of a relationship, but something more like a membership. That you recite an oath of allegiance to Christ. And if you do that, then you're in the club. Do you guys know what I'm talking about now? You've witnessed that, dealt with that, faced that on book distribution maybe? I call it quicksand preaching. When you start to get into a discussion with a Christian who has this mentality, no matter what you say and how you say it, at the end of the day, if you haven't recited this oath, the oath of allegiance to Christ as the only way, then you're... you're in trouble. No matter what else is good or bad, you're in trouble if you haven't done that yet. And it doesn't sit well with most people of most other faiths. It just doesn't line up with our experience, does it? Krishna is not limited to this one place, this one person, this one group of people who have these few words that you need to recite, and if you don't say those, then you're not in the club. And yet that's the idea. So now we, from our Krishna conscious perspective, it seems that apparently we won't make that mistake, and practically it'd be impossible for us to make that mistake. And yet if we take a few minutes and look at some of our approaches and some of our everyday behaviors and discussions and habits, there is something of our society trending towards that Christian idea. Prabhupada is enough. I'm going to isolate him. I'm going to make him independent of any other part of the culture and just say Jai Prabhupada, and that will be enough. So today and for the next few days as we're together, I would like us to develop our relationship with the other acharyas, and especially the ones that we see there on the altar, as an offering to our relationship with Prabhupada. Recognizing that his pride, his happiness, was in being a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And so if we don't know who is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, we can't really know who is Srila Prabhupada. How many of you are parents? Now keep your hands raised if that identity as a parent is the most important identification you have outside of being a devotee in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so practically nobody's hand went down. So can somebody really know you if they don't know that you have children? They can know you. But can they really know you? If they don't know you have children, and they don't know how old your children are, and they don't know how your children behave, and what they like and what they do, is it really possible for that person to say that they know who you are? Not really. In the same way, if we don't know and recognize how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, how Bhaktivinoda, how Jagannath Das Babaji, how Gaurakishore are in our lives already, like it or not, know it or not, how they informed what Srila Prabhupada gave us and is giving us, if we can't recognize that, can we really say we know Srila Prabhupada yet? Can we really say we have a relationship with him? My thesis is no. That's my offering, is that we're not able to. And so these next few days, I would like us to develop that relationship with them so that we can come closer to him, Srila Prabhupada. Does that sound good? Okay. Now, Mother Shubhra knows it's very rare for me to have notes, so it means that I love you all very much. Okay, so now we're going to stand up. Does everyone remember last time I was here we did a spectrum exercise where we all started in the middle of the room and then we moved up and down the spectrum of answers to see where we were all at given the topic. Does anybody remember that exercise? Thank you, Mother Himangi. Okay, this will be new or feel new for everybody else. So please stand generally in the center of the room right there in front of Prabhupada. Everybody go there as comfortably as you can. Go ahead. Don't be shy. Nobody's going to bite. We all had a nice breakfast. What we're going to do, I'm going to ask a series of questions. Get closer because it'll be, yeah. What's that? No, it's okay. I'm going to ask a series of questions and you're just going to walk yourself on the spectrum. Okay? So this side of the spectrum is, yes, I could. This side of the spectrum, no, I could not. Very black and white. But you're somewhere on the spectrum. Okay? Nobody's going to be on the absolute, probably. So please sort yourself based on the question where you're at. What's this side? Yes, I could. And this side? Okay. So the first statement. Okay, so just we'll practice with this one. I would be able to eat 5 gulab jamuns today. Okay, good. So you guys get the idea. Okay. First question. Without preparation, I would be able to give a meaningful class on the life and mood of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Without preparation, I would be able to give a meaningful class on the life and mood of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Okay. You'll notice a trend. Without preparation, I would be able to give a meaningful class on the life and mood of Gaurikishore Das Babaji. Spoiler alert, third question. Without preparation, I would be able to give a meaningful class on the life and mood of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Last one. Without preparation, I would be able to give a meaningful class on the life and mood of Jagannath Das Babaji. Okay. Thank you all for your honesty. You can come sit back down. So just popcorn, some reflections from that exercise. How are you feeling through that? Say it out loud, loud enough for everybody to hear. We won't worry passing a mic. Okay, you know something, but maybe not as much as you would like to know. Okay, Mother Himangi.
Something I realized I don't like any classes, but when you were specifically asking me about the acharyas, I realized that it's such a comfortable thing to talk about.
Huh.
And I personally realized
that, like, Jagannath has, like, full of me, you know, that's my
connection. Mm. And, yeah, it's not like a version of giving past, but what we're talking about. Chai. Some more?
Yes. He was illiterate. Yeah, he just wasn't a scholar. Yes. Thank you for reminding us of that. Yeah, very big difference, right? Yeah. Good point. Who else heard that for the first time today? Yeah. So some devotees, share your experience there. Any other reflections from that exercise? Huh. Jai. Beautiful. Mm. You were feeling a little more confident in... Yes. Yes, you didn't consider it that way. Yeah, but as soon as you allowed yourself to... Very nice, thank you. Let's see if any of the men have feelings. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. You haven't independently done work to develop that relationship. Great. Thank you for that admission. Yes, Sneha.
I have the word or the phrase without preparation because I feel like oftentimes when it comes to giving class, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know
about that. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there's no exam, then why bother studying kind of approach? Yeah, thank you. Mayu. Definitely, yeah, we do celebrate. Yeah, the great point that these are not persons who we don't have a wealth of resources in order to connect with. It's true that it's possible and quite easy actually if we take that mood. A little more challenging in some cases. Yeah, good point. I do. Sure, I can't answer that. I can't answer that from an institutional side, because that's what you mean by we, is we have as a community, there's a calendar and it will say different things. I'm not sure. I personally do, because it's a way, as Ma just said, to honor that person and to seek their connection particularly. So I like to do it on Narottam Das's disappearance day and appearance day, and Rupa Goswami's appearance day and disappearance day, even though it may not say in the Vaishnav calendar to do so. You are allowed. You can chant extra rounds. Okay. Some more guys have feelings. I saw somebody's hand. Oh, yes.
Like I was thinking, when I attended Jagannath Puri Yatra, Rumpa Sumaraj shared a lot about all the acharyas, their mood,
okay,
in their life. So I was thinking I should listen to them again, because I felt very connected
at that time. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Okay. In my own meditation and prayer on this, this particular discussion and that we're going to have over the next few days, the content for it came to me in my own frustration, seeing that many devotees, whether it's people coming from India who have Hindu backgrounds and take the Krishna consciousness from that, or people coming from the West and they have no real concept of parampara and Vedic culture and Sanatan Dharma, on either side, very few people ever develop a relationship with the Acharyas. It's usually Srila Prabhupada and their immediate spiritual master, and that's kind of the extent of the Sangha that they recognize aside from the devotees around them. And that also affects the relationships of the devotees around them, because we tend to have a Kanishtha consciousness when we underemphasize the other devotees in the name of reverence and respect and service to Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master. So when we talk about Kanishtha, usually the definition for Kanishtha devotee is a devotee that thinks what? Yeah, Krishna is there only in the temple. So I'll invite, let's not have a Kanishtha definition of Kanishtha. Let's expand our Kanishtha definition a little bit. Krishna is only in the temple, and my guru is the only person that can give Krishna. Prabhupada is the only person that can give Krishna. Can you see how that also creates the Kanishtha dynamic? Because what's the problem with that Kanishtha mentality? Hey, Krishna's there in the temple. Nobody argues with that. But what's the problem with that Kanishtha mentality?
There's no cooperation in working on anything together, and no respect for others who are following someone else.
Beautiful. That's the main problem. You don't need to respect anyone else. If they're not in the temple, and if they don't go on the altar, then why bother? I don't need to deal with them. They're not very important. Has anybody ever felt or been treated that way. Yeah. Not a very exciting way to live life. Either in giving that or receiving that. It's a very ugly mentality. So I noticed this dynamic in the devotees that were coming up in our community, in the Harmony Collective, and many other places, that there is an artificial isolation of Srila Prabhupada and their spiritual master, and emphasizing them at the cost of practically offending other devotees, and particularly the other eminent acharyas. And in that frustration, I read a Vyas Puja offering from my Guru Maharaj, His Holiness Jayapataka Swami. A couple of my godbrothers compiled a very nice book. Maybe you all would like to do this for an offering to your god family connected with Rompad Maharaj. They did something very simple but very sweet. They just put all of his Vyas Puja offerings in one book. So all of the writings that Jayapataka Maharaj gave to Srila Prabhupada for his Vyas Puja, they're there in chronological order. So I was reading that book, and way back in 1979, Jayapataka Maharaj is writing to Srila Prabhupada, "I wish always to remain a coolie carrying your instructions on my head." And I started asking, what's a coolie? Because I was pretty sure Guru Maharaj didn't mean a guru coolie from ISKCON. And I found out coolie means laborer. Like the people that you see working on the construction sites in India, or the people that work at the train platforms and carry the luggage. Coolie means the laborer. And so they're carrying on the head. And so immediately I had this vision of because when you go to Vrindavan or you go to Mayapur, I don't know about you guys, but I'm always amazed by the women who are like thin as rails, right? They're so skinny, and their sari looks like it's going to blow away in the wind. It's so old. And they've got literally like 200-300 pounds that they're carrying on their head. Who's ever seen that? Yeah. And this is how I imagine my Guru Maharaj in that moment. Was one of these incredible, mystically empowered Indian women carrying 300 pounds on his head for Srila Prabhupada. And I thought, well, what could I do to bear some of that load? Or take some load on my own head? How do I become a coolie following in the footsteps of my Guru Maharaj? And in that prayer, that meditation, which came about right at this time that I was expressing to myself and to a few other devotees my frustration with this apparent lack of a relationship to the other acharyas, then a kind of metaphor expanded from those words of my spiritual master that plays off of a metaphor we've all heard before in glorification of Srila Prabhupada. In 1974, the devotees went to see an astrologer in Mayapur to inquire from him some things about Srila Prabhupada's health. Later on in Vrindavan in 77, Srila Prabhupada would say, "Astrologer is like husband. He has to be there." So kind of expendable, but kind of also not. You don't take them so seriously, but you can't not have their input. So Srila Prabhupada had this habit, and he had his disciples go to the astrologer and check in, see what the situation was. And so in 1974, they went to this devotee in Mayapur, this astrologer in Mayapur, and they got a report about Prabhupada. And one of the things that this astrologer said about Prabhupada was that he was building and would build a house that the whole world could live in. Who else has heard that phrase before? Srila Prabhupada is building a house the whole world can live in. That came to us from this astrologer who observed, okay, just like when Prabhupada's father and mother, when he was first born, as is tradition, they took him to an astrologer, and the astrologer predicted that this person would be the most magnificent exponent of Krishna consciousness. In the last 500 years, he'll start 108 temples. He'll go to the West at the age of 70. All those things were kind of there. And this astrologer saw that similar dynamic happening and coined this beautiful phrase, Prabhupada's building a house the whole world could live in. Now physically, Is it possible to build a house that the whole world can live in? And my Guru Maharaj said about the TOVP, it's already too small. We haven't even started kirtan in the place yet. The first arati hasn't even happened, and the TOVP is already too small. And that's not even a place for people to live. Right? That's just a place to come and worship, and already they're going to have a system for coming in and out of it. Especially on big festival days like Gaur Purnim and the opening, etc. There's just going to be too many people that want to be a part of things in there. The building itself cannot support everyone that would want to be a part of what's happening inside. What does it mean then? And I'd like to popcorn this out. And if we could, would somebody volunteer to write for us on the whiteboard? Yeah, great. Just concise, you know, kind of synthesize it to one word or two words as people share. What then is the nature of the house the whole world can live in that Srila Prabhupada is building and has built, if not a brick and mortar place? If there's not a physical roof and a foundation and several thousand bathrooms, then what kind of house are we talking about? United. Okay. Diverse. Cooperation. Common consciousness. Home is where the heart is. I like that. Home is where the Harinam is, we might say. Chai. Heart is sheltered. Ujvala. Authentic. Nice. Did I see your hand? No.
Common goal.
Common goal. Uh-huh. Compassion. Wonderful. Where we can take shelter. Yeah, a place of shelter. And give shelter. Yeah, very nice. Receive and give shelter. Love, care, affection. Okay. Happiness. Nice. Okay. Then Krishna becomes present there. Very nice. Like Mom mentioned about the kirtan a few minutes ago, then Krishna likes to go where his devotees are. That's nice. Thank you. Yeah, we might want to put Krishna on that list. Sacrifice. Yeah. It's not easy to live in a house with two other people. What to speak of all the other people? Peace. Gratitude. Pretty good list? Okay. What I'd like to do with the next half an hour or so, and then we'll... Yeah, Krishna's in the center. Service, yeah. How did we not get service up there? Wonderful. Now, Srila Prabhupada gave us all these things, no doubt. And yet, Srila Prabhupada never took any credit aside from saying that he was simply repeating the words given to him by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. 1972 in Berkeley, the devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, you're so wonderful. And in his humility, Srila Prabhupada said, I do not know if I am wonderful. But I do know that I've simply repeated what my spiritual master has said to me. what I'd like to do is take this idea of the house that the whole world could live in, and I would like to expand it out to help us see how especially the other eminent acharyas that we worship on our altar contributed to building that house. What were their roles in building that house? And how from that metaphor can we learn to relate to them in the ways that you all just described you would like to? Because as you said, you would like to study more, maybe you'd like to look into and have that sense of relationship with them. But if we were to make a list of all the potential acharyas that we could develop a relationship with, how long would that list be? What would the number of people on that list look like? If we had a list of all the potential previous acharyas that we could develop a relationship with, how many names would be on that list? Realistically, about 40. Right? Our memories would not let us do much more. But who feels overwhelmed by the idea of developing a relationship with even just two or three more? If already we're feeling a little off in our relationship with Prabhupada, our relationship with our spiritual master, then the idea of onboarding someone else, it's a little intimidating. So recognizing, and what I'm hoping to help us see today and the next few days, is that they're already with us. The relationship from their side is present. And we'll be helped, we'll be uplifted, we'll be inspired, we'll be satisfied and feel safe when we just simply recognize it. Very much in the same way that once we actually recognized Krishna was there all the time, it was a big relief. It was a huge help. It wasn't a burden. It wasn't a problem. It was exciting. And we could recognize Krishna's love in recognizing that he's always been with us, even when we didn't know it or want it. The house the whole world could live in. So when you build a big structure, it takes more than Jitendriya Prabhu. He could build a shed that the whole world could live in, but to build a house, it takes a lot of different dynamic people with different qualifications. You need many Jitendriya Prabhus. You need many Mother Humangis. So, I'm gonna try my hand at the whiteboard now. We'll start from the back and work our way forward. The first person that we need when we're building a house that the whole world can live in is a good foundation. Well, that's structurally what we need, but we're talking about people right now. Architect. Almost. I was almost going to say that's the first person we need. So that's a great answer. We need an architect. We definitely are going to need an architect in this project. But the architect needs someone first. Yeah, the owner, the customer. We need a customer. I hear some laughs. It's funny to think about one of the acharyas as a customer. So we have a customer, we have an architect. Now who do we need? Remember, this is a house the whole world could live in. Practically, it's more like a skyscraper. It's more like a sports dome or something. Funds, okay, we have funds. The price is faith, right? Shadavan Janhei. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the namhat, the currency is faith. So we're going to take faith as an unlimited currency. We have those things when required. Yes! I'm so glad it's working out organically. I wasn't sure if it would be this obvious. Laborers. Okay, we're one, two. Laborers. Two more. Who finds the laborers? Contractor. What's that? Decider? Oh, designer. That's more like the architect. Yeah, that's more like the architect. I'm actually going to move this one over here. And maybe that will make it a little clearer. City. Zoning and planning. We don't need them. So we have contractor. They say we need them, but in this metaphor, we'll leave them out of things. Residents. Okay, yeah, you do need residents. We'll put them down here. The residents. So when you have these big projects. Well, okay. So vendors, yeah, that's true. That the contractor figures all that out. When you have these big projects, there's always consultants. Consultants. Why consultant? What do the consultants do? Provide solutions. Why can't the people already present provide solutions? Jai. Wonderful explanation. So in a big project like that, you're so absorbed in what's going on. There's so many details and things to consider that it's very easy to miss out on solutions. It's very easy to miss out on potential wins and create a lot of potential problems. So you bring in third-party consultants to be able to recognize the things that you, with your blinders on, focused hyper-intensively on one particular thing, just aren't going to recognize. So do we all agree that with this team, we would be able to build a house the whole world could live in? Yeah? So now let's fill in. Who's our customer? Good answer, but not the one we're going to write down. Of our acharyas, who's our customer? Not Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada wouldn't be happy thinking himself at the top of this list. Who is Vaishnav Sarvabhaum? Yes, and why is he Vaishnav Sarvabhaum? Vaishnav Sarvabhaum means who is closest to Mahaprabhu. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur had done all his research to establish where is the yoga pit, who was it that he wanted to come and substantiate, to make it official? Right. When the customer's happy, the business will be happy. So when Jagannath Das Babaji gave his approval through his ecstatic dancing at Yoga Pit, although he was this crumpled up old man, practically three times older than any of us here. And he jumped out of his basket, off of Bihari's shoulders, and onto the dust of Navadvip, chanting Gaur Hari Bol. That was the substantiation that the architect needed. So we have our first two. Jagannath. Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur as the architect. Jagannath Das Babaji is the customer because he is the representative of Mahaprabhu. He's the one that's closest to Krishna. That's what it means. The standard of who's the topmost Vaishnav is he is who's most intimately united with Krishna. And when Jagannath Das Babaji was a young man, around the age of 100. He did something quite radical. He did something quite unusual compared to the other customers in the marketplace of relationship with Krishna. Because he was living in Vrindavan. But what did he do around the age of 100? That's right. He left from Vrindavan and went to Mayapur. Now he was living as a Babaji, and as we have all known and heard many of the Babajis, they choose to reside in Vrindavan, and then particularly around Radhakund and Govardhan and the places where Radha and Krishna perform their intimate Nitya Leelas. That's the culture of Babajis. Sometimes that culture is wholesome, sometimes it's not wholesome, that's not what we're going to discuss here. That's the culture though. If you're a Babaji, if you're just focused on developing a relationship with Radha and Krishna, you go to Vrindavan, where Radha and Krishna are. So why did Jagannath Das Babaji go to Mayapur? All the other Babaji started to make fun of him. What are you doing? Everybody else comes here. Why are you going there? You got it backwards. The feelings of separation? There may be many answers, but he gave an answer himself, and it's in this booklet. Anybody ever been to Jagannath Das Babaji Samadhi in Mayapur? They have a nice little booklet that they distribute there. It's fun. It's filled with all little pastimes and anecdotes of his behavior and his teachings. In that booklet, they write that his answer to the other Babajis was, here in Vrindavan, Krishna just broke a pot of butter. And for that, Mother Yashoda tied him up and left him alone. In Navadvip, Nima is running around and spoiling yajnas of brahmanas day after day after day. But he never gets punished. He never gets tied up. And to the opposite, Mother Sachi just continues to feed him more and more. So I'm going where the mercy is. I'm going to Mayapur. From the customer, the architect, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was able to synthesize and understand the structure, the frame, the look of the house, because that's ultimately what we go to the architect for, right? We want the house to look a certain way, have certain features. And what was that feature that was being accentuated, emphasized uniquely by this relationship between customer and architect that hadn't been seen for quite a long time? It was this dynamic of the relationship between Navadvip and Vrindavan, Mahaprabhu and Krishna. We take for granted today, because of the incredible work of these devotees, we don't understand how unique it is to know with full faith that by serving the mission of Mahaprabhu, we will regain our position in Vrindavan. This is what the customer wanted the architect to express. By serving the mission of Mahaprabhu, by developing a relationship with Navadvip Dham, that is how you will regain your position with Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Now, to let you know how difficult and how outside of norms that was, all you have to do is look at the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because what did he spend a lot of his time having to do? He wrote many books. That's true. He wrote 100 books on Vaishnavism before there was practically 100 devotees who wanted to read them. That's true. Very good. Bhaktivinoda Thakur took down how many apasampradayas? 13 prominent apasampradayas. 13 different ideas of how to get to Vrindavan, how to relate to Mahaprabhu, that were not faithful to the true relationship between those two people, those two places. As one man, literally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur single-handedly took on these apasampradayas and reestablished this truth, which we now take for granted, and then a few other subsequent truths that, as an architect, there's also some measurement involved. It's not just a pretty drawing, but there's some details also that the architect takes care of, and we're going to talk about those details now. The apasampradayas, he got rid of them with this recognition and understanding that by serving the mission of Mahaprabhu, you can reestablish your position in Vrindavan. And no other way. Trying to go to Radha and Krishna directly is directly the sign of deviation. It's the clear-cut sign of deviation. If you think you can skip over Mahaprabhu, or you think you can pervert Mahaprabhu's example into something to serve your desires for sense gratification, then you won't actually achieve the real fruit of what this is all about. Only by thinking yourself a servant of his mission will you be able to regain your position in Vrindavan. He supported this, and he fleshed out the structure. The schematics of his drawing were made up of four principles, which again we take for granted. Who's confident that anywhere you go in the world, on a Friday night, if you go to the Bhakti Riksha in Italy, or you go to the Bhakti Riksha in Chicago, or you go to the Bhakti Riksha in Michigan, you're going to get prasadam, kirtan, bhagavatam, and devotee association. Who's confident in that? Who's had that experience, that you've gone somewhere in the world where you had no idea there were devotees, and there you find yourself on a Friday night with a plate of rice ball sabji in front of you? Now we take that for granted today. That's what it means, Hare Krishna. Holy name, association, Krishna prasadam, where we say, holy name, Krishna Katha, specifically Bhagavatam. Krishna Katha means referencing the Bhagavatam. Right? Because Krishna Katha, according to these apasampradayas, was many other things. Right? So anchoring it to the conclusions present in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave us this as the framing of the house. This is what the house looks like. If there's Bhagavatam, if there's the holy name, if there's Krishna Prasadam in the association of devotees, then you have Mahaprabhu's movement. Then you have Vrindavan. Without those things, you don't have anything. We take it for granted. But just 150 years ago, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to deal with the idea that if you don't have a deity in a temple, you don't have Krishna in Vrindavan. If you don't have a brahmana speaking, you don't have Krishna in Vrindavan. How many temples did Bhaktivinoda Thakur start? Trick question. That's right. He established a culture by which the real purpose of any temple could be brought anywhere else in the world. They call this disruptive industry. What are some modern day examples of industry disruptors? Uber, Airbnb, Amazon. Google created the industry. Apple's not a disruptor, actually. But you just gave the three most famous examples. Uber, Airbnb, Amazon. What did they do that disrupted the industry? They took the industry away from the industry. They decentralized. You don't need a hotel to be a hotel. You just need a spare bedroom. You need a 6x6 space on the floor. You can go to Airbnb and find places. If you have a sleeping bag, they'll let you come and stay. $20. You sleep in our living room. No problem. Now the hotel industry is pulling their hair out. Right? They had to pay all these permits, they have to hire all these staff to wash the sheets and give us the little soaps and the shampoos and the maintenance, right? Zoning, taxes. And here's some punk, he just has an empty bedroom and he's making $600 a month. totally disruptive of the status quo, of the establishment, of those in power who were gaining something for themselves based on the old ways that things are done. Uber comes in, taxis, right? You know, how much did it cost to own a taxi in New York City 10 years ago? And you don't even own the taxi, you own a license. You own a piece of paper that lets you drive people around. You'd be shocked. Clearly none of you. Almost $1 million. Almost $1 million to get the license that says you can drive people around in New York City with a car that is painted like a New York City taxi cab. That was the power of their brand. But Uber came in and said, we don't need your brand. Because this guy is driving around by himself and he doesn't mind driving with somebody else if that person's going to pay him $40. Overnight, an industry that took $1 million to enter into now costs the price of downloading an app and having a car made in the last 10 years. See the disruption? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was disrupting the ultimate industry a century before Uber and the rest. Because he looked at the establishment and he said, we don't need any of that. We don't need any of you. We just need Bhagavatam, holy name, prasadam, and sadhu sangha. Beautiful, right? Okay. So has our architect done his work? He did so much more also, but time, and it's a metaphor. So we have our customer. The architect has framed out the design. It's a unique structure now. Can you guys see the uniqueness of the structure compared to others? Who's our engineer? Yeah, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Lion Guru, right? You don't want some slouch being an engineer. What does the engineer do? That's right. The engineer takes the airy-fairy ideas of the architect. Oh yeah, that's a nice enormous arch that you have there. Like the dome in Mayapur, right? Okay, it's one thing for Prabhupada to want a dome in Mayapur that is larger than the dome in Washington, D.C. Right? Okay, that's a nice thing for our acharya to say, and it's a nice picture on the paper that the architect drew. But how, in the rural farmlands of West Bengal, are we going to have a dome that spans an eighth of a mile? Call some good engineers. So that's exactly what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. How did Srila Bhakti Siddhanta come to this planet? By the prayers of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He called up the customer. I need to hire an engineer. I need you to send me somebody who can actually be an advocate for establishing this culture of the holy name Bhagavatam, Prasad, and Sangha all over the planet. I can't do it. I need you to send me one of your men. That's how we hear Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying. Please send me one of your personal men. So what was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's given name? What was his first name given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Bimala Prasad. Why was that name Bimala Prasad given? Yeah, Bimala Devi there. And what's her relationship with Jagannath for the devotees that don't know? That's right. All the maha from Jagannath first goes to Bimala Devi. And then it comes out to the common people. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to Bimala Devi and prayed very intensely, asking, please help my family to receive one of the Lord's personal men so that we can execute his mission as I've been asked. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came and he engineered a way by which a movement which had zero temples to start with, zero brahmacharis, zero sannyasis, and not many books, just a handful that were printed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur had written many books, but he hadn't printed many books. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta engineered a way to establish 64 Gaudiya Mats all over India. And again, we take for granted, okay, temple means brahmacharis, temple means sannyasis, temple means congregation comes and does service, and there's different tiers of that service, so you can start washing pots, but then you can end up on the altar with the deities, and it's a gradual process, and you become educated in that process, and eventually you'll be able to attain a responsible place of service and help others do the same. Sound familiar to anyone? Anybody been to Sri Rangam? Anybody ever get invited to wash a pot at Sri Rangam? Anybody been invited to wash a pot at Puri Temple? I can't even see a pot in Puri Temple. This was revolutionary. We don't recognize today, because Prabhupada was so wonderful, because his disciples were so surrendered, we take for granted now. We don't recognize the work that the engineer had to do. There was no system for this. Well, I mean, there was an idea in the Shastra, of course, but then there was the modern circumstances, and then there was the apasampradayas. There was the lack of resources. And through all that, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had to engineer structures that supported this culture that Bhaktivinoda Thakur established is the house that we could all live in. And so that's exactly what Bhaktisiddhanta did in India. He made the model. He proved the points. Here's where we need a pillar. Here's where the arch is going to be. The foundation needs to be dug this deep. What kind of foundation is the TOVP? Anybody know the dynamic of that foundation? It's not a normal foundation, because it's not a normal building. The TOVP is literally floating. Because in Mayapur, the sands are constantly shifting because of Mother Ganga. And so to try to build a structure that's just going to stay in one place, it's a losing battle. So the TOVP is built in such a way that it's actually able to be moved up and down. The building will move up and down slightly. The foundation will float. Yeah, they're incredible, right? These engineers are crazy people. They recognize that's what's needed. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta built, he was the one, the lion guru was the one that established this culture of Krishna consciousness in the age of Kali Yuga. It needs some fluidity. We cannot have the rigid social systems that we had 150, 200, 300 years ago. That's not going to serve the purpose. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was going to a temple opening. And he saw one brahmachari was not there. And he said, where is that brahmachari? Oh, Gurumaraj, he fell down. He got involved with some woman. We chased him away. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's reply, very disappointed, he said, we won't open this temple until you find me that man. Whole big temple opening, how many years they were fundraising, building, developing. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is putting the whole thing, not willing to do it at all, until this one person is found. And so the devotees, where are we going to find this guy? Somebody remembered that he used to fix watches. If somebody's watch broke in the mutt, then this guy could fix it. So maybe he's working at some jeweler now. So they go around the towns, nearby the villages, and one watch shop, sure enough, he's there. Gumaraj is asking for you. Gumaraj is asking for me? What does he want with me? I'm just a fallen, rejected disciple. No, you're not a fallen, rejected disciple. You're still close to his heart, and he's refusing to open the temple unless you come. That culture of fluidity amidst structure, amidst principles, That came to us from the Lion Guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. He proved how Bhaktivinoda Thakur's high-minded, airy-fairy ideas of these things as the architect, nice philosophical descriptions in Chaitanya Shikshamrita and Jiva Dharma and Krishna Samhita, many other books where Bhaktivinoda Thakur paints a very idyllic potential picture of unity and diversity and cooperation and accommodation. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta proved it is possible. We do have the structures. We do have the materials. And so that brings us to our... Who's missing from the list? Srila Prabhupada. We're going to skip our consultant for now. He's over here. Srila Prabhupada. Our Srila Prabhupada, who is the contractor. Now, what does a contractor do? Outsource. Very good. Who's a better outsourcer than Srila Prabhupada? He went to a world he's never been, right? Cultures he's never seen, only read about. And he found, sometimes qualified, sometimes not so qualified, but that's the magic of a good contractor. Whoever he found, he got the job done. He established, using those structural pieces given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, our ISKCON mutts are a part of the Gaudiya Mutt. If you go to Mayapur, still today, what is there on the front gate in Mayapur? On the front gate, Navadvip Chandrogya Mandir. Still to this day, you will see the insignia of the Gaudiya Mutt. The six-pointed star that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta designed himself. The logo, the branding of the Gaudiya Mutt is still there. ISKCON is a part of the Gaudiya Mutt in that mood of Srila Prabhupada because he simply modeled what we do after what they did. Our temples are not places of deity worship primarily, although maybe they've become that in some places. Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta primarily expected their temples to be places of education. Shishi Kishore Kishoriji Ki Jai, Shishi Gorni Tai Ki Jai, Jagannath. Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. They're meant to be places of education. Educating who? Not just the brahminically born, not just the boys, not just the wealthy, everyone and anyone. There's a way to take them from where they are to where they're supposed to be, residents of Vrindavan, by the mercy of Mahaprabhu. That was Srila Prabhupada's brilliance as a contractor. The architect's plans are there. The engineer has laid out the structures that need to be obtained, and the expert contractor knows how to put the pieces together from there. So I'll take some reflections now. We just have a few minutes left before it's meant to be saver break. So we'll take some reflections and comments, and then we'll pick back up on this in the next session tomorrow. We're going to get into where is our place in this metaphor and how the house is continuing to be built and what else needs to be added. Those kinds of discussions we'll look to tomorrow. But some comments and questions now. What is the position of Gaur Kishore? So you might, by deduction, be able to put him out here. But we'll get to that tomorrow. Yes, ma'am. Definitely not. Any real emotion of appreciation that we have towards any devotee or any avatar of Krishna, any element of the divine reality, that is our greatest treasure. And we ardently pursue that. It's like a dig here kind of indication. So we treasure that. And also, in my experience, as my relationship, if my relationship with a particular person within the divine canon is growing, that automatically informs and develops my relationship with everyone else. So they're not exclusive of each other, but it happens simultaneously. But that inspiration, that indication that may come that a particular person, like my Guru Maharaj, I can say this also as a part of this meditation, I could see and I was jealous of or inspired by his relationship with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because the Nam Hat and the Bhakti Riksha was something that he designed and implemented in our ISKCON, and it's directly coming from the writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and particularly six newsletters that Bhakti Chaura Maharaj had found that he asked Jayapa Thakur Maharaj to translate, and from that translation work then so much happened. So clearly there's a relationship there, and that gave me that indication and inspiration that, well, hey, I can also, it's okay. It's not a slight to my Guru Maharaj to have relationships with the other acharyas. In fact, it's what he would want. So thank you for that question. Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Hmm. Thank you. Thank you for that appreciation. Yes, it's not that we're not ranking in a mundane way here. We're helping ourselves to see the dynamic of their service. They didn't all just come and do the same thing. They did it for the same reason, but they did very different services according to the, you know, where we're at. I'm from Detroit, and so Detroit is famous for the assembly line. Right? The assembly line. And I often think about myself standing there on the assembly line of Mahaprabhu's movement. Now, it may look really cool to be the guy that puts the steering wheel on at the end. Right? I'm like, imagine, I'm standing there with the steering wheel in my hand. But where the car is coming to me, it doesn't even look like a car yet. It's not even a full frame. But there I am with the steering wheel. I'm not going to be able to do much service. Right? So where am I in the place on the assembly line of Mahaprabhu's movement? We hear about the golden age. Where are we at in that golden age? And what is the needful of this moment? What does the situation call for? What kind of expertise and application? So rather than the steering wheel, I probably just need to put two bolts in the frame and let it move down the line so the next guy can put his two bolts. Somewhere way down at the end, somebody else will get to put the steering wheel on. But Krishna will know I put my two bolts in. For Krishna... And we're getting into more of what we'll discuss tomorrow, but that's the idea with the acharyas also, is that they had particular contributions that they felt called to make, and they did in fact make. Yes, Prabhu.
I thought this was a very nice analogy.
Thank you for the encouragement. It's a relief to hear. I said it's a relief to hear, so thank you. Yes.
So the word prototype is what the engineers
have. Jai.
Create prototypes.
Huh.
And then they let the manufacturing team go ahead and take that prototype and develop it.
Yes.
Into the product
you'll actually use. Yes.
That's one comment. The other comment I was going to say is that in our mundane sense of these roles, there's a very definitive hierarchy. And expressing one's own inspiration and so forth. However, in our, obviously in our line, that's not so much the case. The contract is not just a contract.
Yes, absolutely.
A tremendous degree of innovation, thought, Mm-hmm.
Yes, the structure itself is not the important thing. Thank you. Thank you. Very helpful. Yes, Mother Hemangi. Definitely.
How do you see their work? Because Prabhupada, because the mood that we have, like, you know, Jai Prabhupada,
yeah.
Any other scholar in the Gaudiya Vaishnava, I'm not just talking about this response. Because we are the sole followers of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, other Gaudiya.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
And Prabhupada didn't translate it like that. Now, do you see the moon that there's immediately the movement is something different than what Prabhupada
said? We're rejecting, yeah.
So, are you going to be addressing that, or do you not know that we can have
a... I can speak to it now. That's a nice question. Did everyone understand Mother Hemangi's question, right? That there's a lot of people making contributions to our understanding of Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, some of them not exactly in our direct line, and others who are coming in the line from Srila Prabhupada, and at the same time they're making comments on things that he apparently already commented on. So why do we need your comments when we have... There's some nuance or difference in, apparent difference in the commentary. So sometimes there is a difference, and we should watch out for that. You know, there are opportunistic people who take advantage, just like, why are there one of my favorite pastimes I hear your Guru Maharaj tell, 4,000 different versions of the Bhagavad Gita. He'd read 7 of them and didn't understand anything. He just understood there was something to understand here. But until he read Prabhupada's, it didn't come. So we do need to be careful. There are opportunistic people who see what Prabhupada has done and they say, let me come in and try to ride the wave of his momentum, ride on the backs of the hard work of these acharyas, let me look like an acharya. Okay, that's possible. Has it happened? Yes. Will it happen again? Yes. So we watch out. But in the name of watching out for those people, we often spite the good faith efforts and earnest contributions of other devotees. So there's an irony for me there in the question and in the idea. Because somebody else comes along and maybe say they make a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. We'll just use a hypothetical. Well, Prabhupada already has the Bhagavad Gita, so why do we need your Bhagavad Gita? The irony is that they're accusing the person of equating themselves with Prabhupada, but by the accusation, they're the one doing that. Do you see? By the accusation, you've made something, you're trying to usurp, you're trying to overstep Prabhupada by having your own commentary on Bhagavad Gita. They're the ones overstepping Prabhupada by saying that. Parikshit Maharaj comes across Kali hacking at the legs of Dharma, right? Imagine if anyone has seen a cow who has some wound in India. Anyone seen? Your heart just breaks, right? You see a cow, their shoulders cut because a car hit them, or their eyes infect. I mean, you just, oh. Now imagine you saw a cow in the worst, I mean, literally legs hacked off, and the person who's doing it is in front of you. How are you going to feel in that moment? That's what Parikshit Maharaj walks into, and when he asks Dharma, who's doing this to you? Dharma won't say. For a few reasons, one of which is that, and Dharma says this, the accuser becomes the abuser. By the accusation, the person themselves is making the offense. And it's an irony to say that changing the paint on the wall is the same as putting up the wall, which is what Prabhupada did. Changing the paint color, okay. Not a big deal. It's still Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is still God. You still have to approach the bona fide spiritual master. The three modes are still afflicting you. Okay, so you have some nuance, something else, your personal experience, you're bringing it out, a perspective others can relate to, a color they're attracted to. We appreciate that. And one good example of the Bhagavad Gita, specifically, is Rancho Prime Prabhu over in Europe. I know many devotees who prefer giving his Bhagavad Gita to Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Why? His name is Rancho Prime. He's a devotee of, he's a disciple of Prabhupada, and he's made a very accessible Bhagavad Gita, which doesn't have all of the kind of details that hang up a lot of people, comments about women, comments about socioeconomic situations, etc. He just takes the principles that Prabhupada gave and emphasizes the ones that are most important in his commentary. And many people have read his Bhagavad Gita and then can appreciate Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita later on. So it's an irony that the accuser is the abuser in that situation in most cases. That many times the devotee is simply trying to accentuate the gifts of Srila Prabhupada, and instead that person who's accusing them of thinking otherwise is the one themselves who is overstepping Srila Prabhupada. Other questions, comments? Yes, Ma. Oh, the postman, yeah. Prabhupada said we're just postmen. Yeah. Well, my Guru Maharaj said postman. He wants to remain a coolie. You know, taking the instructions of Prabhupada on his head. So Srila Prabhupada also gave the example of a postman, that the postman will, we're simply delivering the message. The postman doesn't write the letter. He just delivers the letter. So that's the standard of parampara, and maybe that's a good place to conclude, is that when I had my experience in Judeo-Christianity and I came to Krishna consciousness, one of the things that really gave me an intellectual faith and sense of safety initially was recognizing that what Prabhupada said is what Bhaktisiddhanta said. And what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said is what Narottam Das Thakur said. What Narottam Das Thakur said is what Madhavendra Puri Prabhu said. And I could go back thousands of years and I could find the same answer being given to the same question. And that was a great relief, because in most other religious traditions, you don't see that. You see significant adjustments of the, we would say, Siddhanta. So it's not much Siddhanta. And that in our own community, that's how we have to really examine any new material on that standard of Siddhanta. Does this change fundamentally the experience and expression of the culture of serving Krishna? If yes, then we really have to question who's this person to make that change. But if it's simply accentuating it, you know, coming at it from a different angle of a vision to inspire us, which is often the case, then it's wanted and it's practically needed. Otherwise things become, because of our mundane vision condition, they become stale. So we'll end there. Thank you all very much for your participation, encouragement. Over the next 2 days, tomorrow there'll be two sessions. So we'll get into some of the topics we touched here, and we'll finish fleshing out the scene that we have on the whiteboard. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.